and welcome to episode 241 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a place where a small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of Indigo Park, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And Brit. And we're also joined by the carry-on abroad in human form that is Tony Esmond.
This is like a proper carry-on abroad place I'm at, actually. Well, it won't be by the time you listen to this, because I should hopefully be home, as long as the wind don't blow too much. But, yeah, it's proper carry-on here. So,
yeah. As we're speaking, Tony is enjoying some sun, sea and sand, and he's also an hour ahead.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't realise that. Tony didn't let us know through the daily photos.
Oh, yeah. you didn't have any idea that Tony was enjoying lovely weather. No, neither did I.
Allow me just to say that every day I go outside, take a picture of me standing next to the pool or with the sunset in the background saying, what's the weather like at home, lads? Every day. It's cheering me up no end.
Oh, I'm glad you're happy.
Yeah, you just said, fuck off, dude. Yeah. That was
especially blunt. It made me laugh.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I had water pissing through the fucking conservatory.
And then we've got a fucking... Look at his fucking rat feet by the pool.
Yeah. Well, I was in the pool just before that, so I thought I'd give you a little shot, action shot on my feet just by the pool.
Lovely.
To be fair, I've had a blast, mate. You'll hear who I did an interview with and who I've been hanging about with later. But yeah, it's been nice. It's been all right. Lovely. Yeah.
Did you have a moment where you stepped out of the sea like Daniel Craig?
Well, I always like to do a wee in the sea, don't you?
I don't think Daniel Craig did that. Well, maybe he did.
I bet he did.
You know.
How boring is that new Bond song? Fucking hell.
It's pretty boring. Yeah. It is pretty boring. I think I only listened to the first couple of bits and I was like, oh, it's boring. Yeah. Send it off.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah. You haven't got me by the first 20, 30 seconds. I'm usually like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Can't beat the Casino Royale theme. That was
right.
That was both dope and legit. Two things I like through music.
Oh, my God. What is happening? Yeah. What's happening? I don't know.
You know what else is dope and legit?
What's that, Dan?
Comic House.
Wow. Hey. Who are they?
They're a marketplace and database for indie comic books.
You could have just said they're our sponsor, Dan.
And they're our sponsor. Yeah.
And they're the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and we love them. Now, if you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on there, like people who self-publish. They can list their book on there for free, start selling their hard copies straight away. But the big deal that we talk about all the time, we read all the time, is the Comic House app. It's genuinely a brilliant app, especially for like lots of self-published and indie creators, because there's a whole library on there. And if you've got digital like books and stuff, it's easy to upload them, and set up a profile so people can follow the rest of your work and things like that. And there's new stuff going up all the time. What sort of things have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
New comics available. We've got Retake the Complete Collection by myself, Pre-Mortis issue 1, Sire Superhuman Crime Investigators volume 1, Captain Cosmic issue 3, Hopper Detective of the Strange. Been told that's very, very good.
Yeah, I reviewed that this week. I really like that. Really good.
Yeah. Who's the Kelly Crimson? You reviewed that as well.
Oh, yeah, did that last week. Yeah, that's up in the top 10, isn't it? Yeah,
nice one. And also, I uploaded Vanguard issue 17, so yes. Ready to read right now.
Oh, is that all you've done, 17 issues? Mate, you need to put your finger up.
Yeah, sort it out, mate. Bloody hell.
I also put all the Vanguard book 1, 2, and 3 on the Comic House site for sale, so if you want to buy them, go through Comic House.
Saucy. There you go. Bang. There you go. It's well worth it. I've seen those books, and they are lovely.
I haven't had mine yet.
No, got me up with Tony and Swap.
Yeah. And I actually, I forgot to pick mine up as well. So.
Did you?
Yeah. I have too much fun being around Dan Butcher. That's
what it is. It does blast past those days at the con.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And then, before you know it, when it comes to pack-up time at a convention, you're just in the mode of, get everything packed away, get it organised, and just go.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Immediately. I would do want to do those things where we just after the con, you can just go chill out and have a chat and don't worry about getting home.
Yeah.
Hopefully we have that experience later on this year.
When we do an international con, we'll be all over that.
Yeah.
By the pool.
Here we go. Bringing it up again, Dan. Have you noticed that?
We do Vegas Con or something. It'd be fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, Comic Cows, they're great. That, all those digital comics and more are available on the app. And it's only like £3 a month. You get a 14-day free trial. And if you go to comiccows.com, you can find out more today. So, yeah, there you go. That's the sponsorship ad out of the way. And we've got a couple of brilliant bits of audio for you this week. We were very lucky.
It's been a busy week, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We had two interview assignments. I say assignments. We just spoke to some great creators. Myself and Dan Butcher managed to talk to a very exciting writer, and that's upcoming. And also Tony, while he was away. Because, you know, Tony Esmond, he doesn't hang about. Even if when he's having a jolly, he's still thinking about comics and wants to talk about comics.
I was drinking quite heavily whilst doing this interview. You may notice later as well.
Brilliant. This is going to be... I don't have to heavily edit that audio,
drinking
though, do I?
Heavily.
I won't lie to you. Today's been quite boozy. I'm not really that of a boozy person anymore.
I'm not really that of a boozy person. is that a Thrashers over there?
I do like the expression heavy drinking.
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
You are, good one. Yeah. Tony, are you drunk as we speak?
Not, I wouldn't say drunk.
That took about 2 minutes to come out. I wouldn't say drunk, but I would not argue it. Anyway, so you got that fun to come.
Yeah.
But before that, we had a brilliant little chat with Michael Morisi, who is a writer that has got lots of exciting stuff coming up. And we've spoken about his work, namely The Plot, as has been mentioned on this show a few times. So we talked to him about some of his past work, present work, future work, and just the stuff he loves writing in comics. Like from all areas of comics as well, whether it be sci-fi, horror, kids comics, there's something for everyone in this little chat. And he's definitely going to be coming back on the show in the future. But enough waffle. Let's just put the interview in here. Now, shall we, Dan?
Let's do it.
Right then, comic lovers. We're very pleased to be joined this week by a writer who's on everyone's radar right now. I know he's been mentioned a few times on this show in the past. He's writing such titles as Wasted Space, Roche Limit, The Plot, and has recently been announced as the writer for an upcoming Clone Wars series, which is quite exciting.
Mm.
It's our distinct pleasure to welcome Michael Morisi to the show. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great.
We are all the better for speaking to you. I hear that you're no stranger to podcasts either, are you? Mm.
I used to do a lot more, actually. So it's kind of more seldom that I'm not asked as much. I don't know.
Well, you might get asked a bit more after this. You're too busy writing comics now, though, aren't you?
I think it's partly sometimes I get asked, like, it's hard to juggle, like, because, like, yeah, I'm writing all day, and then night times I'm with my kids, and then weekends is, you know, it's like juggling and carving out time, which is always tricky, as we had to, like, shuffle even our time.
I know where it's always from there.
Never stops, man.
No, it never stops, but you're here now, and that's all that matters. And I know a lot of our listeners have read a lot of your work. I mean, I myself am a huge fan of The Plot.
I just started working my way through Wasted Space. I'm really enjoying that. It's really good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, obviously, you've got a growing library of comics that you're building up. It's usually customary that normally when we have guests on like this, we ask them like how they got started creating comics, etc. But you yourself actually wrote some prose first, is that right? Like the Black Star Renegades novel, is that correct? Is that how it all started? Or did you always want to make comics? Were comics always on the list for you to do?
No, it's prose was sandwiched between. I had written a few comics like Hoax Hunters, Curse, and Burning Fields is before that. So I had done like stuff with Boom and Image was before that, and then Wedge kind of like in the timeline is the Black Star Renegades novels, and then after is when kind of takes us to now, like Wasted Space, The Plot, Clone Wars, things like that.
So it's almost like you're in a big band and then you just stepped away to do a couple of solo albums and now you've come back to the band.
Right, exactly.
I was one of the things,
my high-flying birds, you know.
Working my way through Wasted Space, how do you kind of, with group dynamics in comics, how do you go about handling them? Do you have kind of like character notes on each character and how they interact with one another? Or does the script define how they bounce off one another?
Well, what I kind of like to do always with character is they always, for me, I think a character has to always want something. You know, I don't think you have much of a character if they don't want ultimate something. And so I know what, you know, I have a clear definition of what Billy wants and what Molly wants and what Dust wants. You know, Billy wants to be happy but can't admit it. Molly wants to do something good for herself and for the people around her and the, you know, world at large. And Dust wants to make his friends happy, you know, and they're pretty simple wants, but it drives a lot of what they say, most of what they do. So that comes out just in knowing that. And like you said, in the script and the story itself is how those, you know, fundamental desires are going to be framed within the context of the story.
I mean, that's an interesting thought as well, because writing a teen book, because especially with a lot of indie like books, and I know there's a lot of people listening to the show create their own comics and stuff, and they focus on, you know, the sole character, you know, the Batman, because it's easier to concentrate on one sort of main character and then their rogues gallery. And we all loved the X-Men or Justice League and stuff, but it's a very different ball game when you're dealing with team dynamics, isn't it? Because everyone has to have their moment to shine.
Yeah, it's always about balance, you know. It's always about finding ways for them to, for the characters, you know, for Wasted Space, Billy is obviously the lead character. Molly's a little bit, I guess, half a step behind in terms of being like co-lead. But, you know, what you don't want is for everyone to be there just to buttress the lead. You know, you don't want the supporting cast to exist only to prop up the lead cast or lead cast members. And I think you find that a lot more, like you mentioned, like Batman or something like that. You kind of find that issue often, maybe less now, but like, you know, Alfred and the various Robins are all kind of there to like just help bring Batman to where Batman needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, rather than kind of existing as their own entities with their own, you know, again, wants and desires. So it's tough. It's just finding a balance and being conscientious of it, that you want to have, you know, multi-dimensional characters and they all need to be served equally as much as possible.
Yeah. It's dangerous when you get like a supporting character that you seemingly you grow to like more and more the more you write them. You know, sometimes you want to write some of the supporting cast more than you do the main character. Have you ever had that?
Yeah. I mean, I think in Wasted Space, you know, I think it just happened, or it's happening, I guess you can say, because it's happened for me because I'm done writing it, but it's happening because they're just getting released. But like this arc of Wasted Space is more about Molly. I think she would be a lead of this current arc than more than Billy is.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get to this point with her, just because it's important for her growth and evolution. And that's a good problem to have. It means you're doing it right. It means you're creating these, you know, rich characters that, you know, if you don't care about, then nobody else is going to care about. And once you start caring about them, the more you want to do with them.
So moving that over to the is it a book or a comic you're working for the Clone Wars?
Comic.
Series. Is it tricky because if it's focusing on the Clone Wars and they're essentially all clones of one another, do they have? How do you bring out their personalities and get them bouncing off one another if all their aims and objectives are relatively similar?
It's a great question. I think that's a question that, fortunately for me, the animated series, I mean, the actual Clone Wars series, like, answered pretty well. Like, they did a really nice job of making the clones, giving them as much reasonable personality as possible. You know, they're fundamentally, they're clones, but, like, you can see how they evolve and become different, different characters, different people, between Rex and Echo or Cody and Hardcase, etc. They do become their own people over the course of the show, and I wanted to kind of mine that further, because I love the clones. I love the clones fundamentally as character and their what they bring in their story within the Star Wars universe. So all the stories in the comics is the comic series is like 5 issues. Excuse me, 5 issues over 5 weeks in April, and like all of the stories are led by the clones. They're thoroughly clone stories. The Jedi do pop up and they play a role kind of in the circumference, but these are really about the clones and about who they are and living in wartime and being created for this. And so it's an interesting take. It's an interesting thing
Okay.
to attempt, because you're right, they're clones, but
Yeah.
it's kind of neat to be able to dabble with that.
I think there's a lot of legroom in the Star Wars universe that doesn't focus on the Jedis, and I would love to see more of that explored. And yeah, through the Clone Wars, that sounds fantastic. I've just plot just the it's the same characters. My son watches Star Wars Rebels, and they pop up in that, but they're a lot older. Is that right? Is that the same characters, Rex and excellent.
Rex. Let's see, Wolf. Who is it? Rex, Wolf, and Gregor are the three that pop up in that.
Okay. I
need to
They're
watch.
great
I need
actors.
to watch that show. I've heard so many good things about it.
Oh, it's
Yeah,
fantastic.
I think we lost the kids network that did it up after season three, I think. But
Oh,
like
wow.
Vader turns up in one of the episodes and he's just done to perfection. He's an absolute boss.
I mean, doing something like that's a completely different challenge, though, isn't it? I guess for you. I mean, it must have been a dream come true to be asked to, how did the sort of title come about?
Well, it's through IDW, and IDW does the Star Wars Adventures line, which is the younger readers, all age content. And I've been writing in that line for a bit now. I don't know how much I've done, I forget. But like, I when they announced the new Clone Wars series, and I'm a huge Clone Wars and prequel fan. When they announced it, I kind of came up with the idea to do a series like this. So let's there's so the that timeline of Star Wars is very broad. Just a lot of years in the prequels and in the Clone Wars, so there's a lot of room to you can tell stories in this little kind of pocket over here. So yeah, it was just something that kind of like struck us, like, oh, we should do something. We Clone Wars is animated, it's for kids, we're doing the kids kids comics, let's put those two together at a time when people are really going to be wanting Clone Wars stuff, because the series finally finishing after many years and fans have wanted this for a long time. So just seemed to make sense, and Lucasfilm, Disney Lucasfilm thankfully agreed, and we were off and running.
Yeah,
Oh,
brilliant.
that's amazing. It's going to be interesting. So that's 5 issues over 5 weeks, isn't it? That's so I'm guessing it's all in the can, or it's just coming, it's just coming together now, art wise.
Yeah, we're just kind of rounding third. We're close.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be that's an interesting way to release comics as well, isn't it? Where everyone that's I mean, we in the UK, we years ago there was the weekly comics, and I you don't see so many. How I mean, how much do you get that in the States, like apart from special releases like this, which is 5 issues over 5 weeks? But are the weekly comics such a big thing in America?
Not really, no. It's probably similar to you. Like, it's pops up every once in a while. Like, they'll be ambitious. Like, there was like a few years ago, there was the Batman. What was it called? There was some series, I forget what it was called, but it was a weekly series for like a year. Like, and I think Batman Eternal, and they did it twice.
Yeah, okay.
And that was like an event. That was like a thing, But otherwise, not really. Sometimes, books, as like they'll some double shift would be twice a month, but that's about as that as much as we get typically.
So, I mean, I guess, like, having worked in that sort of with IDW on those sort of books, you already sort of trained, you were kind of mentally prepared for doing that sort of project. And
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
yeah, which is quite different to like the other sort of works that you're doing with like Vault, etc. I mean we've talked a lot about sci-fi. The plot is where you grabbed me by the heart, my dark heart. I love seeing like creators that want to try different things. I mean, there are some people that just do the superheroes and nothing but the superheroes, and there are the people that just do sci-fi, but you know, the plot's quite a different, you know, from Wasted Space to the plot, it's a very different kettle of fish, isn't it? It's a how did that story come about? I mean, because with Tim Daniel as well, isn't it? So
yeah exactly. Yeah, so Tim, so it's funny because I often get confused as a sci-fi fan, and to a degree I am, but like my sci-fi is like Star Wars and maybe a few other things. And like Wasted Space is just kind of dirty, like filthy Star Wars, you know, that's yeah. really, you know, yeah. So I'm not like,
I mean, huge... that could open up to a whole different audience, dirty Star Wars. I mean, let's...
I know, right? The fan fiction boards will be a buzz. But like, I'm not like a huge, I don't want to say I'm not a sci-fi fan, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan, but I am a huge horror fan. I, for my whole life, I've been watching horror, and I love, yeah. love horror. And so Tim Daniel and I, who we've co-wrote this, we co-wrote, for context, a couple other books called Curse and Burning Fields, which are also two horror series that were for Boom, you know, a few years ago. Yeah. And we had always wanted to do this third book, and who knows, maybe we'll do a fourth and fifth, but we always kind of wanted to make this kind of like a spiritual trilogy in a way. So we were kicking around this idea for a while for the plot, and it took us a long time to develop, because I think of what we've done, this is definitely, at least for me, the most personal book. You know, it's about, you know, grief and, yeah. Mental illness. So it was a challenging book for me to write, but and to develop for both of us, I think, for those reasons. But it started to develop. You know, Adrian, the editor at Vault, really loved what we had of it, and you know, step by step, it finally became a comic. Thankfully, you know, Josh Hickson, who is you know, an artist, is absolutely incredible, and he makes the book look. He's so good.
some of the creepiest imagery I think that's on the stands at the moment. I think, I mean, regularly that when we do the weekly Let's Pick a Cover, the plot will normally be one of my picks for cover of the week through the digital browse, because I think issue 2 with there was the face with all the fingers rising up from the water. That's one of the best covers I've seen in such a long time.
Yeah, it's a beautiful marriage, because. You know, Josh is just simply such a great artist, but Tim is such a he also does the comic design work. Yeah. He does all of Vault. He's been doing design work. He was at Image for years. He's just you've kind of known his invisible presence in a sense. But the marriage of those two together is creating something pretty unique. Those covers are astounding, and they work everything out in granular detail together, and I just kind of like sit there and like nod and try to, you know, give the appearance that I know what I'm talking about. I'm like, oh, okay, guys, yeah, that sounds great.
I mean,
I don't understand, but sure.
Is the story is it like a 12 issue series? Is it ongoing, and you know, for the foreseeable future? I mean, how long do you see this story being?
It's eight, but it's kind of more, because every issue has been at least 26 pages. I think the last one was 30. The issue 5 Josh is drawing right now is 30. So they're all, if we're going like typical 20 to 22 page comics, technically, with, you know, in terms of page count, it's probably more like 10 or 11 issues. With, if you're going to be, you know, do the weird math,
but yeah.
In terms of releasing, we're putting out 8 issues. That's always what we had in mind. Tim and I went into it having a pretty strict beginning, middle, and end. And you know, we're staying to it.
I mean, it feels very much sort of like an episodic, like a season of a TV show. Do you know what I mean? It does feel like there's an end in sight. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. God knows what's going to happen to the people in the book, because I mean, some of the recent issues, there was when one character got pulled underneath the water, No, I'm not going to spoil who it was, people, but if you read the book, you probably know what I'm talking about. There was a moment between some creature and one of the main characters that was deeply disturbing.
That's coming from you, Vince.
Yeah.
Five is going to, I think, haunt people for a while, so get ready for five.
Yes,
it only gets worse.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, it's a haunting book, and I think that's what I like about sort of horror comics, because I know sometimes horror can be all show, in especially in comics, people feel the need they have to show, you know, the gore, or they need to show the monster, you need to see everything. But I like those stories where, you know, everything's in shadow. I mean, if it works in film, it can work in comics. You know, there's panels in the plot where I can't see this creature that's in the background, but the mind's sort of it works with the mind, doesn't it? Because you sort of put the pieces together and think, oh God, what is that? You know, I mean, how do you like your horror? You know, do you like to see the monster?
No, I actually couldn't put it better. I mean, I'm more of a psychological horror. Like, I do enjoy gore, and there's some, like, you can have a lot of fun with that. But no, I'm more of a Romero Carpenter fan. While both of them can delve into to being kind of gory or a little bit gross or whatever, I think they do so with really great effect. You know, The Thing is, I think, intentionally disgusting at points, and, you know, there's, you know, I think probably most notably like Day of the Dead is Romero's most kind of gross, but I think they pull it off to great effect. But the point, though, essentially to that point, is that they put, first and foremost, both of them put suggestion and a sense atmosphere and mood and dread to really kind of get under your skin. And that's the kind of horror that I like. You know, if I was watching, you know, a big inspiration, well, it became an inspiration. We were working on this long before Haunting of Hill House came out on Netflix, but that was like, became like a perfect kind of like model of like what you could do with just so much suggestion. And making the story emotional, you know, getting that emotional resonance where you care that the characters are in jeopardy because you care about them, you know? And when the monster appears or sort of appears, whatever the case is, you are deeply terrified because you don't want to see this person, something terrible happen. So when the terrible things do happen, they're much more impactful then.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You need to do with that with horror is like build up the characters so they're kind of relatable.
Yeah.
The kind of the trashy stuff, which I enjoy too, is they jump to like the kind of the jock, the babe, all those kind of stereotypes.
Yeah, but they lean into that, don't those kind of books, don't they? And you know, they're for that audience. But if you want to tell a sort of a deeper, more layered story, especially someone that, you know, if you're dealing with themes like grief, you can't just stomp in with heavy boots with a big monster story. Otherwise, people won't get those sort of messaging that you're trying
like
to
Michael pointed out with the Haunted and Hill House, he had the time to kind of pull these characters open, and there were many episodes I can recall that were just the from one character's point of view, so you got to know them a lot more.
I mean, it's weird because like if you look like whatever you're doing, like it's, and I always find, follow this as a writer, you have to fully embrace, you know, that's why like Eli Roth's Hostel worked so well at the time, because he had a very clear aesthetic and purpose of this, like what came to be known as like torture horror, that he fully went in for. He didn't, like, there was no half measures in that movie. Or like Saw was similar, you know. So it's recognizing what you're trying to do and knowing it thoroughly, then executing it thoroughly, and plot. We are lucky to, like, this is what this book is. This is what we want to do and how we want to do it. And we've never kind of wavered from that pretty clear vision that we had at the start.
Yeah. So you say it's almost like the third in almost a thematic sort of horror trilogy. I mean, for those people who might not know about the other two, so what were the other two again with Tim Daniel?
Curse was the first one we did. It was... is a werewolf story, a kind of a twist on a werewolf story, but ultimately it was a story about the father caring for his sick son, and that takes a pretty kind of the devastating twist with the werewolf's involvement. And then the next was Burning Fields, which I kind of describe as True Detective meets The Thing.
Holy shit. This woman. I've just bought great. Both of these in my head.
Yeah, well, it's that one, I really love that one. That one was like Curse did really well, thankfully, but Burning Fields was just kind of like went under the radar, and that's always, if I look back at my career, that's always kind of be the one that got away, and it makes me sad because I think it's a Colin Lorimer was the artist. Him and Riley Rossmo actually split duties on it.
Oh, Rossmo. Oh, I love Riley's work. Oh, amazing.
Oh, yeah. He did Curse too.
Oh, right. Well, I need to buy some of these. I mean, this whole show exists for people to discover new creators and new books. So, you know, I know a lot of people are reading the plot, but there's certainly going to be a few people out there who are going to pick out these two titles. Now,
I mean, it's funny, I've gotten people, like, and it makes me thrilled, especially with Burning Fields has a sort of having this little resurgence, which I said I live to see, because I feel like that just slipped through the cracks. I don't know why. I think it was because it came out of a time where we were in a war and it was about war, and there's like war movies that are at the box office that didn't do well. It's just, I don't think anyone wanted war. And it was ostensibly, it took place in Iraq because it's about the military investigator looking into something supernatural. I don't know. It just wasn't the right book at the time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That happens. That happens, but I still love it. So hopefully people come around.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to get it. In terms of your horror then, are you more in the supernatural or the paranormal? Do you know what I mean? Some people like their monsters to be alien in nature, where some of them just love the werewolves, the vampires, the ghosts, and, you know, do you have a preference?
Yeah, I'm more of the classic werewolf, vampire, supernatural spirits, yeah. Monster. In this case, monster in the bog. I'm in my office right now, and I have a big framed print of the Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is one of my favorites. I'm for that. I like the classic monsters, and again, you look at the original Universal movies, thinking about like subtlety and having a clear message and embracing it. I mean, those movies were brilliant for what they were, just as monster movies and introducing this like wild, great foundation of horror. But also, and there were some deep movies and deep stuff going on in that.
Well, we're definitely going to have you back to talk horror, because
yeah, that's great.
I feel like we are just scraping the top of the iceberg.
Well, I know I said to go. I have like 5 or 10 more minutes if we want to. I can keep going. It's up to you guys, though.
So. Oh no, we will take that 5 or 10 more minutes. I mean, what is the future? I mean, obviously, we've got Star Wars just around the corner, which obviously in April, did you say it was coming out? That's gonna be a crazy sort of 5 weeks, March, April time.
But what, yes, April. Yeah, exactly.
So what else does the year have in store for you? I mean, are you doing more conventions over there?
I actually don't. I rarely do conventions, just because traveling is hard. I used to, again, like, I used to do, like, God, I used to be, like, every 2 weeks I was going and traveling and going to either signing in a shop or going to a convention or whatever. But I've kind of done less and less. For writers, it's kind of tough.
Is it more of a networking thing in that respect with when you do shows like that?
Yeah, it's much more that, like, for a writer, it's if you want to go and meet editors and publishers and stuff like that, which is totally valuable. But if you're looking at like a monetary experience, like artists can go and make a killing doing commissions, and that's awesome. Yeah. Writers can just like sell our stock, and you can only bring so much, you can only lug so much. So like, carrying that shit across the country table and trying to sell it, I'm like, no.
No. It's tough because you can do the same thing just by selling it online. So obviously it's great to meet the fans, but I can totally understand.
Yeah, I mean, you can sell. I mean, that's that. I was kicking around that idea because I have so much comps just sitting in my closet. I'm like, I gotta do something with this stuff. But yeah, so I go once in a while to, like Emerald City is coming up in Seattle, and this is the first time I'm actually not going in like 5 years or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's I'm kind of bummed because I love that show, but I was like, I don't really have anything to do there. So
Well, I
stay
mean,
home.
we've talked about it on this show, even in the UK, like conventions, they are an expense. They are, and they're work as well. That it's hard work and an expense. And if there isn't, like you say, if you're not selling commission, some artists will just do commissions, and that makes up their table and their hotel and travel and everything. But if you're not necessarily that lucky, then it can be a pricey task, especially in the States when you have to fly everywhere.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the thing. If you really look at it, the money that like I said, you can only bring so much stock. And then it's like the more stock you bring, if you're flying it, then you get charged more because the way, if you're shipping it, it costs more. And God knows what's going to happen if you're sending it in the mail to wherever you're going. So like you're just spending more and more. You're lucky to what you can bring and sell in a weekend. Maybe you can break even for all your expenses. But what wasn't paid for was like you sat for like 30 hours at a table, a time that you could have been, actually working and, like writing scripts or, pitching ideas or whatever. So like even if you break even, you still kind of lose. So the math for writers conventions is not good. It's not
Yeah,
great.
yeah, yeah. So, convention aside, then, what projects do you? I mean, I've noticed that there seems to be more books with your name, and especially last year, you had quite a lot of titles come out. Whether they were, like Wasted Space was done for quite some time and is now coming out, but now I guess it's all fresh, new projects. You must have quite a few lined up for this year.
Yeah. So, if you're looking like kind of going on the line, the plot will end 4 more issues. Wasted Space still is going through. It'll go into next year. Still, and that then comes in at 25, issue 25. And then new. we can talk about Clone Wars, but in March I have 2 series coming out. I think I'm front loaded with stuff coming out, but I've a series called Archangel 8, which is with Axel Alonso's new company, AWA. That comes out March 18th. That's like the launch day of their first 4 titles.
Oh, wow.
And mine's in there. Yeah, it's gonna be cool. Like the titles are really good. It kind of leads off with mine. There's a book from JMS called The Resistance that's kind of building their universe. But yeah,
So
mine is
what sort of books are these? What, is this like a unified sort of universe, a mini universe, as it were, or is it just separate stories?
It's a little bit of both is what AWA like they have. So the Resistance is going to be the thing. Think of it as like the event title that everything will spin out of that's shared in that universe. Where my book actually is, there's some books that aren't, Jason Starr has a book that's coming out the same day called Red Border, and that's just a book that exists as an original title. Archangel 8 is just an original title. It's not necessarily tied to the resistance and what that's going to build. So yeah, and Archangel is kind of like I could call it a Punisher meets Hellblazer. It's pretty dark.
Right. Put that on your wish list, people. And
Yeah, it's a good one. It's pretty dark. It's me, CP Smith, who was at Marvel for quite a while, is illustrating it with Snakebite Cortez on colors. He's amazing.
nice. So, and when is that going to be launching again?
That is March 18th. So I have two, actually, weirdly, I have 2 books launching on March 18th. It's just coincidence. So it's Archangel 8, and then something way, way totally different is a book called Hexagon.
This is the all age, more of a sort of all ages sort of kids book, isn't it? I saw
Yes, very definitely embracing it being a kid's book. Yeah.
So tell us more about that one, because I thought that was quite interesting compared to some. I mean, you just mentioned The Punisher crossed with Hellblazer, so I'm quite.
So this is not anything to do with either The Punisher or Hellblazer. you know, it's a book. I'm actually. It's an idea from this a musician, a DJ named Don Diablo, who went to this publisher, Impact Theory. This is Impact Theory's only their second book, their second title that they put out. The first was called Neon Future. And it's about a young kid whose name is Don, who basically takes place in the 80s. And we think of it as kind of like a Last Starfighter type of story. This kid plays a video game. His dad has banned him from video games his whole life. And he plays this video game, and it opens him up. Opens his life up to a much larger world, full of adventure, sci-fi adventure, and it's a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a book that's for kids, you know, and that's something that's important to me that I want to keep stressing, because I feel like we get a lot of books that are ostensibly for kids, but not really, you know, like it's Avengers for kids. I'm like, these are all still grown men. Like, you know, like these are adults with they still have adult problems. It's softened, you know, you've softened like the violence and you made it a little bit simpler of a story. But like, I think kids comics, which we lack, unfortunately, should be about kids, for kids, and with kids, you know, with children. So that's what I really want to do. You know, as a parent myself, that's really what I wanted. And Tom Bilyeu, who runs Impact Theory, who's great, shares the exact same philosophy. And he's doing other books that are coming out soon that are like, you know, if this book is for a 17-year-old girl, it's for a 17-year-old girl, like thoroughly. Again, going back to Tom, embracing what it's about and who it's for. And Hexagon is for 10 to 14, maybe 9 to 14-year-old boys. You know, other people can read it. Go ahead. You might love it, you know, like that doesn't exclude anyone, but like if you're writing it for someone, then, you know,
that's the own that.
You know,
which is why when you get like some older reviewers, they're reading a kid's comic and say, oh, well, it doesn't do this, or that. Well, you're not the audience, so it doesn't matter.
Right. Or just acknowledge that it's like being a restaurant reviewer and, you know, giving a bad review for a steak because it's not pasta. It's like, well, you got to review it for what it is, you know, like this is a book for kids. So, you know, yes, it's not for you, but you can still engage with it and say, okay, what should a kid's book do? What should it accomplish? Does it do those things? Not like, what do I want it to be? Oh, didn't meet my criteria. It's bad. This steak's not pasta. And you're like, well,
I'm really hungry now.
Tricky with kids comics, like how far can you kind of dial it up or not? Sometimes I can think, oh, maybe that's a bit too much, but often I can recall reading stuff as a kid and thinking, oh god, that's horrific, but actually looking back it wasn't that bad, and it kind of pushed boundaries. So how do you kind of tackle that? Where do you think the line's drawn of like, oh, I wouldn't put that in, or versus I would?
You know, I think it's about how you frame things, because I think kids can handle a lot. It just depends on how you give it to them. You know, like I watched just this summer the film version of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Okay.
And I went into that being like, I do not envy the person who has to make PG-13 horror, you know? And I watched it, and it was real scary and really good. And totally appropriate. Like, kids, I can see, like, even though I was watching, like, Halloween by the time I was, like, 6 years old, but, like, I could see, though, kids, like, who are not, parents are not as, were liberal as mine, being 12 years old and watching Scary Stories Tell in the Dark, and it being totally appropriate for them. Like, and again, it's made in a certain way that feels for kids. It was scary for me because I just thought it was, the imagery was scary and stuff, but, like, it's all kids. It's all the characters in the movie are children. They're all dealing with stuff about growing up and maturing and coming of age and stuff like that. So they understand what these kids are going through. They can relate to that. And so it makes like where you can go with that a lot easier and a lot more flexible. You have a lot more flexibility because, like, you're taking kids with you on a shared journey, and I think that gives you more opportunities to take them to darker and deeper places because you're not losing them.
Yeah. Wow. It all sounds amazing. I need to watch that horror film as well, but that's that one's been on my queue to watch for ages because it does look bloody creepy.
It's great. It's really good. It was one of my favorite movies from last year. I don't want to say I was surprised. I just wasn't expecting it to be that good. It was terrific.
I know it was from the director of The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I absolutely...
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I loved that.
So
good.
It's great. And he did Troll Hunter, too, if you saw that.
Oh, yeah. I've not seen that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Andre Ordeval. I'm probably butchering his name, but he's, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And he'll probably do the plot one day. Who knows? Who knows?
I wish.
So where can people, obviously, keep us posted on all this amazing stuff as it comes out, Michael. But where can people find you online, etc., to find out the latest?
I'm on Twitter at Michael Morisi. Say Instagram too, and I have a website, michaelpmorisi.com. I'm around.
Yep, and you'll be hearing a lot more of him. We're going to talk about these books later in the year. I just know it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thanks very much, Michael.
Well, if you're ever open again, I'm free. We'll talk again. Oh, brilliant. When you guys can handle when you're. I don't wear out my welcome.
Yeah. How was that, eh? Brilliant.
Good lads. Nice one. I'm an early. I'm going to be enthusiastic anyway.
Well, when are you not, Tony? When it comes to
comedy. I'm looking forward to the thing we've got coming up.
Oh yes.
What's that, Dan?
Tony's done an interview, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Bully him.
I'm not bullying him. I thought that was going to be a seamless segue into our shout-out section.
Which shout-out first, though, aren't we?
I know, but I thought Dan was. Okay. You know, he's so on point that I thought
he is today. Isn't
he? Yeah.
He is.
I've lost one. I think this is. We're going to talk about the interview with Pat Mills.
Well, that's upcoming in a minute.
Am I doing the other shout out?
Yeah,
you got your plan.
The one you literally just spoke
30
to
seconds ago.
Yeah,
2 minutes ago.
We could edit this out, but we're not going to.
We're not.
This is how we roll. I was going to set up a competition in the Awesome Comic Facebook group of doing portraits of one another. So essentially, you put your name in, and we leave it running for a week or two, and then you'll get given someone to draw, and you'll get, say, given a few days a week to draw that person.
So it's like the sort of Christmas art swap, that kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly the same thing, but doing portraits of one another. I thought that'd be a nice thing.
Insulting.
No,
I'm not going in for it, so nobody needs to go like full out on me.
Yeah, don't.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but nothing too insulting.
Yeah, judge it by the person you're giving it to. But
Yeah.
So look for that post on the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk.
Yeah, I'll pin that up to the top, and then
I'm going
to
draw a picture of Vince bending over picking something up.
You want to start this war?
Yeah, I feel like Vince is way more capable of.
And also, Tony, I'm a dab hand at Photoshop. And there was a particular spectacular photo of you walking through an airport with a neck pillow on your head,
like you
had just walked in from like a Z-list version of Dune.
I sent it to Andy as well, and he sent me a picture of Londo Mollari from Babylon 5.
Hello, Photoshop, my old friend. Right, okay.
I thought the customs would even point you out as he come through that one.
I was waiting for my bag. It was taking ages. And then they stopped the old belt going around. So I just stood on the belt without my head. I thought it was funny. No one else thought it was funny. That's what you get for drinking on a plane.
And he hasn't stopped drinking since. So look out for that little art swap. Also in the shout-outs, if you're... let's have a look. I've got the list here. If the Paisley Central Library on Saturday, 7th of March, as part of
the place, not the colour.
As part of the Renfrewshire Library celebrations for Will Eisner Week, There is a comic art masterclass with Ian Kennedy and Tom Foster from 2 to 4:30 on Saturday, the 7th of March. Tickets are free, but registration is essential via Eventbrite. Do stuff like that. If you go to Down the Tubes, there's an article about it there. I just saw this on an Instagram browse, but Ian Kennedy is a bona fide legend in the UK scene. So definitely, if you can make it down to there, go check that out. So that's my.
Well, I've got a shout out as well.
Go on.
Yeah, issue 2 of the Spark is now out. I've got my copy yet because I'm in England, but the looks great. And you can subscribe to the Spark now. Now that we're proper up and running. Issue 3 is in the works. You can subscribe to it by going to thesparkmag.co.uk, and it's actually pretty reasonable. It's not expensive at all to subscribe to. It's 4 a year. Get on there and subscribe, and it will help fund stuff for Little Heroes, and it'll also help fund future issues of The Spark, which we are all now working on. So yep, I'm very, very excited.
Yeah. Fantastic kids comics rule. And from that to a shout out, which is a good tie into our next bit of audio. Tony, take it away.
Yeah, so I've been out to him, Pat and Lisa Mills, as is my wont once a year. We have a little get-together in Spain, and they have been the best hosts ever. We've had a total chuckle.
But they
utterly destroyed me at table tennis. We had a bit of a challenge. I did actually manage to score some points. So Pat is like one of these sort of super secret table tennis experts, and I think I scored 11 against 21. And Lisa almost stole it off her at 16 against 21. So I didn't make myself look stupid, but I did cheat a lot. I did try my best to cheat. So I do say things like, oh, look, there's a squirrel and stuff like that. You know, proper gamesmanship, but it almost came off.
A win's a win, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I sent you the video of us playing of them playing table tennis, didn't I?
Yeah.
It's very good. Yeah, but they've been proper good hosts, and we spent the afternoon chatting about something you're about to hear about. So we did a little interview over quite a long lunch, to be fair. We did a little sort of 10-15 minute interview about Spacewalk, which is almost done, and I am now involved in writing something for it, so I'm very excited. So if you have a listen to this, you'll hear Pat talk about that and a couple of other things, all very interesting.
Shit. I've just pressed record.
Yeah, don't ask me shit.
It's recording now.
Don't ask me shit.
I'm here with Pat and Lisa Mills, who I'm not allowed to speak to, but I can speak to you, Pat. So we've been chatting quite a lot about Spacewalk. So you're getting towards the end of the process now, is that right?
Yeah, we've got nearly all the artwork in. I think we've got about 95% of it. And now we're on to the production side. And that's actually proving to be much tougher and take much longer than we realised, I think.
For any particular reason? Or?
Well, it's getting everything right. Like, for example, the logo. So we went through, we got one logo designer and that didn't work out. And now we're on to our second logo designer. And it's like... Lisa is very good at designing things, but she's not a professional, so she's almost there, which means we can lay the thing out, but it's almost tempting if she'd done the whole thing, because by the time we've described to a designer what we want, you know, it's like a whole day's gone by, you know?
Right, okay.
But it's got to be right. I mean, we've both got a vision on how we want the logo to look, to reflect the fact that, there's a warp. So, for example... With the title, it's Space Warp. So we say to the designers, give it a kind of warp. And so they go way over the top. So we keep saying to them, less is more. So you have the warp, but it's got to be like a space warp, not a Casper the Ghost warp,
okay.
And so on. And it's amazing how long that stage is. But we're hanging on in there, and I reckon another month. And then
good, excellent. Yeah.
We hope, yeah.
Because there's quite a few awesome comics pod ex-guests and listeners and stuff who are included in the artwork now. So you got Ian Ashcroft.
Yeah, Ian's doing Hellbreaker, and that's complete. And Gareth.
Gareth Lighthome, brilliant. Seen that? Both brilliant.
Yeah.
Both really good.
Gareth's on Executioners, and that's pretty much finished. And so he's just working on the opening story to kind of introduce the comic to the readers. So that's we're still playing around with that a little bit. But
how much can we say about that? Because I know there's a theme to it, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, what we've got is that the space warp is a phenomena that creates infinite Earths. So you've got a number of Earths, a number of different possibilities, and you've got a kind of heroic robot character called Slayer, who is kind of a hero in this scenario. And he's trying to prevent what you might call the more negative aspects of the warp. I mean, for the most part, the space warp creates all kinds of heavy shit for everyone. So you've got dinosaurs pouring into 1970s Liverpool. Another world, another Earth where... microbes become macrobes in the tradition of Fantastic Voyage, all those kind of things under the microscope become mega-sized and so on. So, you know, there's a series of pretty chilling worlds, and they're kind of interacting with each other, and behind that are the Warp Lords, kind of Cthulhu-like characters, who are just getting off on the whole thing. They're sort of voyeuristic watchers. They're feeding on it through their optic nerves and just enjoying it immensely. And so, you know, there's a sort of a pretty good division, I think, of good guys and bad guys. And it pretty much presses all the kind of classic science fiction buttons, say dinosaurs, futuristic cops, future war and so forth.
Yeah, the underworld, which is a favourite of mine, kind of underworld, isn't it?
In Hellbreaker.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Hellbreaker, I mean, this is one of the things, they're all high concept stories, because I think that's what we really expect in science fiction comics, or certainly in the tradition of 2000 AD. And so, you know, you kind of work out this world and you're thinking, my God, there's all these possible spin-off stories from it. I mean, once the premise of Hellbreaker is that the warp has resulted in the all those people who are in hell for all eternity escaping and breaking back into the world of the living. So it's, how would the living deal with that? Well, obviously not very well. There'd be a lot of problems. So so you've got that strata. And then you've also got this the leader of these creatures from hell, who are known as Infernals, and he's an Instagram influencer. You know, he's seen as hot stuff because he's
a bit like you and I.
So he's very good looking. He has 2 million followers on Instagram and all this kind of stuff. And so these worlds are very rich, and that's another challenge that I found, which is at the beginning of 2000 AD, we used to have what you might call feature backups, which explain different aspects of the stories, and I always miss those. I think the readers do too, because they explain certain elements of the stories, and so.
What you're doing with them, you're doing them in different ways. So they're not a straight feature on the... There's angles you're coming in at different ways in it, aren't there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So one might be a recruiting poster for these kind of space knights. You know, do you want to be a space knight? Join up and you get all these wonderful medals and there's small print about how you're going to die horribly, you know, at the hands of alien facehuggers and all the rest of it. So that's one, and then another one, which you'll know yourself, is in the case of Hellbreaker, is the Department of Infernal Affairs, the DIA cops, interviewing an Infernal, and, the Infernal is trying to get away with saying very little, and the experienced cop is having a real go at him.
So saying them on. So we're looking at maybe a few months to go before releasing, and what you'll do is you'll probably let us know when there's going to be a release.
Oh, absolutely.
Event, or maybe you might do or not.
Well, once we've got past production, then we get onto marketing, and I would say, let's say we've got another month on production. Whether that's optimistic or not, only time will tell. So let's say that takes us to, say the end of March. Then a month on marketing, which takes us through April. So in theory, we should be launching probably in May. That's how it's looking at the moment. But of course, the great thing with these things is that you're not forced into that position that we so often were on traditional comics, where you've got to say, it's got to go. No matter what it's like, we just got to get it out the door. We can afford to say, well, if it takes another couple of weeks to get it right, then that's what we have to do. And it's not so much being, a perfectionist. It's knowing that the readers are perfectionists. If we get something wrong, they're going to go, it was all good apart from that one. That was a bit crappy the way you did that story. So I have to kind of second guess anything that doesn't quite...
I mean, having seen even just a few of the emails that are going backwards and forwards, there's an incredible amount of care to even the minutiae of the stories and stuff like that as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is a really important aspect of Spacewarp, and I hope it pays off at the box office, is that these are stories where the artists and myself jointly own the rights to. So they are, it's creator-owned. Now, the difference there is really obvious. I don't think there's any artist I've ever worked with on 2000 AD who would have put up with the kind of crap where I sort of said to the artist, look, this is good, but that bit over there isn't right, and this bit isn't right, and that bit isn't right. And because they're creator-owned, it's worth their while making those changes.
Yeah.
Because, I field-tested enough comics to know that readers will pick them up on this or that and say, well, this is good, but I didn't like that character, or I didn't understand things. And so they've gone through, in some instances, three drafts of a page. And equally, I've done the same thing. So when I come to write the final draft of each story against the artwork, it's probably be quite different to the original version, because you get deeper into the characters.
Yeah.
It's a bit like if you write a novel and you go through, three or four drafts maybe. And there's no reason why that shouldn't be the case with comics, particularly because they need to be very readable and understandable. And I think that there is a tradition amongst perhaps some comic fans where they almost enjoy that page looks, like Egyptian hieroglyphics, but I kind of worked out what was going on and I enjoyed it. But if we want to reach non-comic fans, in other words, the kid or the man in the street, everything's got to be very clean and clear. And so that's one of the reasons why pages go back for revisions, and why I'll revise my own story. Because I think if I go with my original idea, it's not clear to the readers what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So I want to make it as sharp as possible. And then when we've done that, we've got the final acid test, where we're actually going to test it out on a school full of kids, and I'm really bracing myself for the for their
scary,
verdict.
Man.
Yeah. But we did that on 2000 AD. We tested it out on, and so I'm following exactly the same path. And but I think it's worth all this, because if we can prove that doing a comic where it's creator owned and everyone makes, not just a living, but does well out of it financially. I mean, that's our final objective. Then it's going to encourage others. And we have to do that, because I think this old system of buying all rights and so on means that you are often going to get second-grade work, because there's no incentive to make it first-grade work, because
you've just got
as long as you're halfway decent, no one's going to push you out the door, and so you can cruise along. But it's not very good for your creative soul. And in my case, I can't really do that. I have to, For me, I approach comics as a form of artistry. And so if it isn't art in that sense, I don't want to know. I mean, yeah, I could, and there are in the past, successful comic writers who have just banged it out. But that's because their end goal in life is rather different. A classic example would be Tom Tully, who I would say... he was, say, before my generation and John Wagner and Alan Moore and so on. Now, he was very, very talented, and he quickly realized what a dreadful system it was, selling all rights. So he used to whack this stuff out, even though, you know, I would say his talent was comparable to any of us.
Yeah.
And he made a lot of money and retired to a pub somewhere, bought himself a pub and... You know, so that was his end result. But as I don't want to knock stuff out to buy a pub, I have to see this as art rather than just how many stories can I bang out in a week, which was how Tom saw it.
You talk quite openly about that being a thing at the time. But having seen, certainly I've seen some of Gareth's work, and I've seen, thank you very much, I've seen Hellbreaker now. That's some good stuff. Like genuinely two guys who are like putting the best work I've seen their work. I worked with one of them and I've seen their work, but this is like best work I've seen out of them so far.
Well, I mean, in the case of Ian, he has this remarkable gift that makes me feel rather nostalgic for the days of Romeo and Jackie, which possibly many of your listeners will think, what the hell are Romeo and Jackie? But it's a tradition of romantic comics which were widely read, and Ian's characters are literally hot. The male and female characters clearly have the hots for each other in a major way, and it's without any, it's just in the eyes and the body language, and that's an incredible gift.
Yeah, I mean, I've read it without any lettering, and it comes across definitely. They're
really sexy, and that came as quite a surprise because that wasn't specifically in the script. It had an element of it in the storyline, but it wasn't overemphasized. But Ian really picked up on that. And then in the case of Gareth, you have this astonishing science fiction world, which we made sure it was very different to Mega City 1 and so on, but it presses a similar button. That, you know, you have these strange futuristic cops who have a very different agenda to Judge Dredd, but they're equally menacing and weird and so forth. And Gareth just got it all in one.
We fell in love with your video, because you had a video online, didn't you, of you looking at his artwork?
Yes.
Yeah, it got many views through our Facebook group, I've got to tell you, because it's a great little video. Yeah.
Well, what comes over even more once he's actually turned it into strip is Gareth has a sense of humour that I think would often be identified as 2000 AD humour.
Right.
It's black comedy. And so we have this guy who's a tycoon in the tradition of any number of these social media corporate bosses, you know, whether it's Bezos or any of the others, and he's captured him perfectly.
Yeah.
So the audience is going to get it straight away. This is a modern CEO of a modern transnational company, and just the humor in the body language is exceptional. So in a way, each artist has kind of gone through. They've all got their unique selling point. I mean, that's why they're there, and why I maybe turned down one or two other artists, because I couldn't identify their USP. What were they bringing that was really special to the story? And another one that springs to mind is Aid Hughes on SF1, which stands for Special Forces One, Future War. Now, he's got a group of six characters. Two human, two robots, and two aliens. And they're all involved in this kind of, you know, classic future war. I mean, that's a hell of a gig to give an artist. And he was born to draw it. So it's tremendous. I'm just in awe of what they've done. Yeah?
It's going to look great, man. The little bits I've seen of it, it's going to really kick off. Gareth and Ian's the two that I've seen the most of, and they're absolutely looking great. Yeah, really good. Okay, the other thing I wanted to mention of is you beat me quite resoundingly at table tennis.
That's only because Lisa and I play every day. And
not just you, Lisa beat me as well. I like to point out. I'll take it on the chin.
I will come in there and say, yes, I certainly did beat you, Tony. Yes.
Thanks, guys. That's brilliant.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks.
Two for two.
Good.
Bang.
Yeah.
A little update about Space Warp and about table tennis. So there you go. Yeah. Pretty good.
Lovely. After all that joyous comics wonderment, it's time for us to sign off. Tony's half cut. Me and Dan have a cold.
I got a cold too.
We're really united.
Yeah. You know, it's been in the pool all that time. You know, sometimes it gets cold after a while.
It's the coronavirus special.
Customs, or I'll never get back in the country.
Nah.
Well,
don't worry. You'll be on your way back by the time this comes out.
That's true. I'll be in the air.
You're always in the air in some way, shape or form.
That's true. Yeah.
anyway, from that nonsense.
I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Who knows? You know, you're an enigma. anyway, comics. We want to recommend you some. And who would like to go first? Tony, do you want to go first?
Shall I go first? Okay, yeah. So I have read a fuckload of comics while I've been away, to be
fair. Oh, you've changed.
I know. Yeah. I was sort of thinking about which one I was going to talk about, and then I decided just to read something out of Floating World Comics, so I quite like this stuff. And it's Slasher. It's a 5-issue miniseries written by Charles Forsman between 2017 and 2018. It's a sort of crime horror book. Do you know who he is? I think he did End of the Fucking World. If you know that, he did Revenger.
Oh, yeah, that was the one that was turned into a TV series, wasn't it?
That's right. Really, and a bit of an underground feel to it. Floating World Comics are a very small little indie publisher, but they've got some really interesting stuff out. A lot of it is Charles stuff. Christine is a data entry specialist who is discovering her own style of sexuality and has a penchant for blood. What is the monster brewing inside her? That's a little spill that happens on the... on the Comixology page. She's an unhealthy relationship with a wheelchair-bound nerd called Joshua, and he also has sort of similar interests. I have to admit, I own The End of the Fucking World, but I have not read it. I have read Revenger. There was a Halloween special came out at the end of last year, which I really like. It's a sort of female Punisher, but just like sort of with this sort of crazy, raw, underground load of violence and blood in it. You know, there's no... every bullet sort of slices a head off, or you know, it's that sort of thing. There's a real sort of through line of insanity in the page of Avenger, and that continues in Slasher as well. There's a real strangeness to, I don't know, there's just a real strangeness to the violence in it. It's just like very otherworldly. It's just really sort of pragmatic. Everyone gets attacked. There's no backward stepping in it, you know. It's got a real sort of savage goriness to it, but it's got a sort of a homemadeness to it, I suppose. I suppose the only thing would... I was trying to think what I could compare it to. It's a difficult one. The only thing I could compare it to would be a movie, and that's... Is it Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer? I always forget the name of that film.
Yeah, that's the one.
Really?
Yeah. Fucking hell. There's a little bit of that in it. It's a sort of suburban America kind of... But mixing that sort of psychosexual thing going on. She, in issue one, Christine gets a work appraisal from her boss, and he crosses that boss... worker line and starts giving her a shoulder massage, and you think, all right, he's gonna die, isn't he? Because she immediately goes to the supermarket and grabs a load of red meat, which she squeezes, and then she sort of fantasizes about squeezing chunks of beef into her mouth, and then she goes to a knife shopping. You know, in America you get all these sort of firearms counters where they go, oh, this is a 0.647 Magnum, and you'll like this one, and they show you it. And that there's she goes to a counter that's a bit like that for knives, and she chooses a Spiderhawk JV2000 lock knife in black, and she's a bit upset that it doesn't come in red, and he says, no, it's only black and camo, which is, oh, that's a shame. But there's a couple of things that aren't really dealt with in that. During that moment, you see a couple of... When she's buying the knife, she gets sort of some flashbacks to something that is clearly awful and terrible that has happened in her past, but it's not really explored enough, I don't think, later on. Meanwhile, Joshua, who's her nerd friend, has got this sort of super overbearing mum who you think is probably obsessed with him being sick, although he's not sick. She may be poisoning him. She catches on that he's talking to this Christine on the phone and nicks his phone, locks him in his bedroom. Finally, Christine takes a plunge and kills an abusive husband as he sits in his car waiting for his wife. So it's sort of quite a random killing, which is one, it reminded me of something like Henry. She's walking, she's been in to buy some booze or something in a supermarket, one of those sort of supermarket garage things she used to get in, like Breaking Bad. It's set in a sort of Breaking Bad kind of area, that sort of maybe Florida or something like that. And her husband's shout, oh, is that see you next Tuesday of a wife in there? Tell her to hurry up, what's she doing? And you realise that's the woman with the kid who's crying in the supermarket. So she just goes over and cuts his throat, like, immediately. and then she sort of dresses up. She finds this sort of leather, sort of, I don't know if it's leather or rubber, bodysuit, and goes to her pervy boss's house. And he thinks, oh, here we go, in for a bit of a sex hookup, the wife's away, and this woman's turned up in leather. And instead, as he turns away to sort of pour her a drink, she cuts a big slice out of his cheek from his eyeball to his chin. And you think, oh, here we go. And it just sort of becomes more sort of random murder after murder. She doesn't really care about it. She just does it and gets on with it. She's not really actually that fussed about being caught, seemingly. She just kills people in broad daylight. And there's none of this sort of, oh, hidden in the shadows, I'm a serial killer. She just sort of walks about in car parks and, you know, bars and stuff like that, and just sort of murders people. I'm not sure if I missed a bit in it, but suddenly it sort of takes a bit of a turn, and I found the disconnection. There's a sort of slight disconnection with what happens to Joshua and what happens to her, but it ends up she's in a sort of meth, you know, sort of redneck meth dealing kind of characters with, you know, mullets and no sleeves on their t-shirts, and they drive trucks and, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. All of our dreams, really, to be fair. She goes and she gets in a fight with them, and it all becomes very bloody, and she finds Joshua at the bottom of a pit and he's dead. There's something like Henry, or something like a real sort of raw grindhouse serial killer movie, but crossed with maybe that very just off kilter Daniel Clowes kind of sensibility, Charles Burns kind of sensibility, where it's just, everything isn't just quite normal. There's just something strange about it. It does really make you wonder if there are actual people like that who are quite prepared to just take a lock knife and slice you up. And I've met Charles, and he's actually quite a normal guy. He's quite a good chat, you know, I had a good chat with him, and he seems fairly well adjusted, I would say. But this book is not. It's just pretty fucked up. I bought it on Comixology. Just put in slasher. If it comes up with more than one thing, which I'm sure it will, just go to Floating World Comics and have a look through some of their books. It's kind of the sort of Ed Piskor, Jim Rugg kind of area of what we're calling outlaw comics now, which is something that me and Adam Falp are very fond of. I think you dig it. It was just one of those sort of impulse buys that I thought I'll buy the first issue. It was only 69p or something. I'll buy the first issue, and I got caught into it. And it's a really quick read, and it's full of character, and it's full of action, and it doesn't fuck about. And I'm thinking there's not much sort of meta-textual kind of philosophy going on in it. It's just like full on. Let's get our murder on. So I kind of enjoyed sitting by the ball under the umbrella. There you go. That's nice. My one.
Nice.
You gonna give a shout out to your comic?
Oh yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got 10 days left. 10 days on Atomic Hercules. Get on it. We've passed the amount, but we've got some nice little stretch goals with a very romantic story about how me and Adam met as a comic strip, which you might get if it, which is involving me sitting on a bus and shouting at people.
Lovely. Who wouldn't want that?
What have you got, guys?
Dan, take it away.
I've got a Kickstarter I backed last year. Acceptable Losses, written by Joe Glass, art by Danny Flores, colours by Moose Bauman, letters by Mike Stock. And it's got a cover by Carlos Pedro. This is a variant cover, but I'm not sure what it is. I really enjoyed this. I'm going to read out the blurb, which I've got handling here, about the story. Acceptable Losses is a one-and-done, self-contained, 32-page comic detailing the last official mission of the USA's sole superhuman operative, the US Eagle. On this fateful mission, Eagle finds himself at the mercy of his enemies in the field and callous and careless superiors at home. After the mission goes spectacularly wrong, we see the greedy and power-hungry Senate that caused the devastating failure face a horrific attack on the US soil and act of revenge, but by whom? It's a really nice comic. Like, I really like the kind of whole one and done thing. It's kind of imagine like Captain America, but more kind of hard edged, and it sets up a lot of kind of moral questions, and it paints in grays, and it doesn't tell you this is right, this is wrong. It's very difficult to me to discuss that what happens in the comic without actually spoiling the premise and reading the whole comic through.
It does sound like something that, you know, just from that synopsis, sounds right up your street, especially knowing like Vanguard and the work you do with that.
I saw it and I was like, oh, this sounds really interesting. So I read it and it's good. I think you'd have to go. I'm not quite sure where you can get it because obviously I just got it up for the Kickstarter, but if you check out it's got a website, joeglasscomics.co.uk. I imagine you'd be able to get some through Joe's website or
I'm sure you will.
Online. Yeah. But if you kind of like stuff like the Ultimates, like Vanguard, kind of superheroes in the military, it tells a great story. The art is absolutely fantastic. Very kind of fluid, but really colourful. Yeah, it's just really well to put together comic.
Nice.
I think I'd consider picking this one up in hard copy because I've got the paperback. I always seem to go kind of digital now as a thing for Kickstarters because I always think, oh, fuck, it's going to be like the States. And obviously this one wasn't. It's a UK.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it's hard. I want you to kind of like read the comic and get the same kind of thing from it that I did and not have the whole story fleshed out for you because essentially you go to spoil the territory immediately and you it would ruin your experience of it. But it's lots of kind of real world violence and heavy themes that are dealt with. I like to think quite
consequences
mature.
There's lots of
consequences and it's not so much preaching to you like this is right and this is wrong. It portrays a situation that in sort of international politics and warfare that you imagine would come up, and you could say six of one, half a dozen of the other on the scenario. Was that the right thing to do? Yes or no?
Okay.
And it doesn't say yes or yes it was or no it wasn't. It kind of leaves the question a bit open ended, which good. I liked. Yeah.
You backed the Greg Hinkle book this week, so didn't you? As did I.
I did. Yes.
Love Greg Hinkle's work. Yeah. Really good.
I can't wait for that to come through.
Shall I look up and see what it's called so I can give it a shout as well?
Yes.
It's called Nocturnal Commissions, a macabre monster mystery. And it will have, as you listen to this, 9 more days to run. Anything by Greg Hinkle, I'm all over. Yeah.
His fucking work on
Airboy
was fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah, why he's not more out there, I don't know. But great stuff.
Right, okay. Yeah. I'm the last to go, so
I sent you a picture of you. I've done a drawing of you two.
Excellent.
Have you just sent it?
Yeah.
Right, live on air. We're gonna. That's quite good. That's beautiful. We'll post that on the on the thread.
I'm just loading this up now. Let's see what this says.
Dan, you'll be blown away.
Yeah,
oh, that's quite nice.
I've got quite a good likeness.
Yeah.
So go to the Awesome Comics Talk group on Facebook to see what we're what we've been blown away by.
You got a smile.
Yeah. So my book that I read this weekend came out, I believe, this week from Boom Studios. This is the creative team, written by Simon Spurrier, coloured by Andre May, letters by Jim Campbell, lots of variant covers, and illustrated by our old pal Chris Wild Goose.
Oh, I read this. Here we go.
This is Alienated, issue 1. Now, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this book for many different reasons. Normally, I would read a synopsis, like normally from Comics Ontology. I'm going to read the first couple of lines.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I've got to cut out the first bit because some synopses are waffle, aren't they, at the beginning?
Yeah.
Basically, three teenagers, each an outcast in their own way, stumble upon an unearthly entity as it's born. I think I'm going to leave it there because the synopsis goes on for another paragraph or two and it says more than I realised what the book was about.
Yeah, Comics Ontology needs to get a grip on this. This happens a lot, actually.
Yeah. Because I read this book, I purposely, you know, had faith in the creators. You know, it looked beautiful, you know, seeing the work that Chris was doing on it. I know how proud he was of it. And I just thought, well, I'm going to buy the issue 1 But because of that, I didn't want to know anything about it. I wanted to discover it through the book itself, which was so much better because I discovered a lot of that. So I'm kind of...
Chris sent it through to us, didn't he? We had a read of it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Very kind of him.
But, yeah, so the synopsis, don't read larger synopsis for this book. Just know that it's very, very good. I don't know, there's so many different ways you can talk about it. There's three main characters, all called Sam in their own way. There's a Samantha, Samir, and a Samuel. And they're all sort of... it's got that angsty teenager sort of feel to it. That's how the book
kind of
starts.
It's a bit of a sort of Stranger Things vibe, is it?
Yeah, kind of. But yeah, more if you're dealing more with that sort of outcast at high school, sort of, you know, the older, not necessarily like, because when you think Stranger Things, you think the sort of earlier teens, whereas this is more late.
I ain't seen Stranger Things.
clearly. But, you know, he just wanted to say a pop culture reference, so it seemed like he was switched on.
Pretend like I was cool.
Yeah. That's the one with dinosaurs.
I just listened to Neil Young and Crank. That's all I ever do.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Hopefully not on the plane home tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. If it gets sad, I might have to.
Who was it you... I like the... Was it Europe Comics told you that you should really cut that out?
Yeah.
They're not wrong.
No. Big shout to Arena, our pal.
Yeah. But anyway.
I can tell anyone when they can and can't masturbate. It's not my cup of tea.
Why is it my recommendation that we get
this?
The wank
Germany, 1939. Go to when you want to. Get on with this review. What's happening?
It's not a it's a recommendation. Look, you all need to check this book out, people, because
yes, great last page.
The artwork's fantastic throughout. I mean, you know, I don't know who did it, but yeah,
Wild Goose. It's actually a real story about something that happened to me and Wild Goose when we were children.
Really? Yeah. You were called Samantha as well, were you?
Yeah, always.
I mean, the three separate teenagers all having in their own way the name Sam, and then it cut to like a splash page, chapter one, three kids called Sam go walking in the woods. I just chuckled at that. I thought, oh, that's really quite. This book is full of those nice little touches. There is the characters are introduced. They're three very different personalities. They're not sort of they don't hang out together. They're brought together because of this. Sort of this event which links them sort of telepathically in a way, which brought out a really nice sort of lettering touch as well, because each one of them has a colour code to them. Have you noticed this throughout the book? And you see it in the way that they're dressed. Like Samantha just has a green, but it's, you know, we're not talking Power Rangers type colour code. You know, Samantha has like a green sort of jacket on and slightly sort of greenish beanie, and Sam just has like a Samuel has like a sort of bluish sort of tartan shirt, that kind of thing, and then Samir wears like sort of a red sort of hoodie type thing. But that also follows through to later on in the book when they're joined, without making any sort of spoilers, because weird things happen. Like Tony said, the last page is brilliant, and it is quite shocking.
Don't
what happens
go to it if you buy this, don't ruin it by looking at it.
Yeah, and the first issue is very much, it does a hell of a lot of character building in this first issue, and by the end of it, I knew who these characters were that we were following in the story. I was invested in them, but then what happens at the end, I was like, oh shit, what's going to happen now? I don't really know what was going to happen, which is why when I read the synopsis, I was a little bit spoiled that... you know, I was a little bit annoyed that some of it was spoiled in its own way. So it'd be interesting to see how much of that synopsis is true, as it were. And like, as I said, the colour coding thing, it's also in the way that they're wearing. But throughout their high school day, after they have this moment and they're joined telepathically, they're constantly talking to each other, like just with their thoughts, which brings out a brilliant sort of moment of a juxtaposition of like the activities that are happening in the day and what their mind is thinking. But the lettering for each of the kids is the colour. Like Samir's words are in red and Sam's are in blue and Samantha's are in sort of green. So you always know who is talking when they're not on the panel, which, you know, I just think it's a simple thing, but it was just handled really, really well, I think. There is a school bully who I thought at one point, maybe he's the school bully that's not as bad as I think he is. No, he's a piece of shit.
He might come around. We've got a few more issues yet.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mini series, isn't it? Is that right?
I think it must be, unless it's one of those. Probably it might be like a 6-issue series. Have a find out from Chris, actually. It could be like a sort of image model, you know, that 6 issues, bit of a break, 6 issues, that kind of thing. It's hard to know, you know. But I'm certainly on board for this because, you know, I have no idea where it's going. I know it'll probably get a lot of people that listen to this show probably already checked it out. We always say that.
There's a lot of talk on the Facebook page about it, wasn't there?
I know a lot of that is down to, you know, Chris is an amazing artist, and like he said recently, there's been a lot of nice feedback about this work, and obviously with the Batgirl work and everything, not enough people are talking about Porcelain.
Yes, what's wrong with this? They are on our page.
Porcelain's fantastic.
And it was one of those rare moments where I said, look, if you're not talking about that book, you're doing something wrong. You know, do your homework, because as soon as you discover Porcelain, that trilogy of books, that's it. Yeah. A lot of stuff just doesn't compare. And also, it's interesting to see like Chris's artwork sort of go from that to this kind of story where, you know, this high fantasy sort of, not steampunk, it's, you know, steampunkish, like Victorian, you know, epic tale to high school kids and social media, you know, a story that
I suppose it's come via the Batman and Batgirl universe, isn't it? I suppose there's been that slow transition, but he manages both really well, doesn't he? As we said, he manages some great facial acting in that new issue as well. Just the sort of expressions of the kids and stuff as they're sort of wandering about, it's really nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Because a lot of it is. Yeah. The speech that you're hearing is all in their heads. A lot of the dialogue in this first, probably the second half of this issue, is all in their heads. So they're not actually saying the words. So there's no need. So it is literally his facial acting has to be completely on point.
Yeah,
and it's just amazing. I did also notice that I want to give a shout out to the colorist. Have to go back to the beginning of the book now. The colorist Andre May. There's a lot of half-tone patterns and things like that I've noticed on this artwork, which I thought were quite interesting. Going all the way through, actually, it's I really like a halftone pattern. Sometimes you see it more with sort of older. I know is it Andy Clift? He's done a few.
Yeah, he does that.
So it's interesting to see it on Chris's work. Maybe they've been combined before on other books, but I haven't seen it. But yeah, it looks really nice. It's a really good book. Really good issue one, which we talk about the importance of a good issue one.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
don't be too nice about the Wild Goose. He'll only bully me.
He doesn't listen anyway.
He does.
Does he?
Yeah. After we mentioned it a few weeks ago, he said something about it. Yeah, text me.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, if I'd known that, I wouldn't mention it. No. We mention it because more people need to check it out.
Jim Campbell.
Jim Campbell, in another chapter of I'm going to letter everything in the world ever. It seems that every book I mention every week, Jim Campbell was lettered it this year. And he's a friend of the show, so that's fine. Lots of great books there, great guests, and a great show. Yeah. Somehow we made it through, despite...
Yeah.
All being slightly under the weather, or if you're Tony,
a cold and Tony being drinking,
absolutely drunk off his face,
sozzled.
People will believe that. People will believe it. Well, the time we interviewed Catriona Chapman, and I was drunk.
I will just say this: you don't help yourself.
I know. That is true. It's not a lie.
So, what time's your flight tomorrow?
It's in the morning. I'm not sure. We'll have to have a look. Yeah, I'm just gonna drink. I'm just gonna drink all the mini bar because you don't have to pay for it because I've settled for the room.
God,
I'm gonna drink all the mini bar now and then just pass out and hope I get up in time.
Stay tuned to TMZ to find out if Tony Esmond has made an epic mess of himself.
Sitting on a balcony, weeing over the balcony.
Yeah, well, you do that if you're sober. Anyway, thank you for listening to this week's episode, folks, and to our lovely guests for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed these little chats. These are people that you're going to hear more of in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat's, how many times has Pat been on the show now in some way?
Like the fifth time, I think, something like that. Yeah. He's regular. We love having Pat on.
Yeah.
At least we get.
We did that amazing Accident Man special.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We loved that, didn't we? Yeah.
Are they doing a second one of that?
Yeah, they are. He's announced it. Scott Adkins announced it on Kung Fu Movie God podcast a few weeks ago.
Hey, nice.
Nice. Yeah. Scott Adkins, friend of the show. he forgot us as soon as he stopped talking to us. I'm only joking, Scott, if you listen. But thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if there's anything that you want to find out more about, or if you want to contact us about any events or anything that's upcoming, because I mean, convention season has started, but I haven't heard too much more about.
No.
Stuff that's just around the corner. So next week we'll probably talk a bit more about.
I'll work out a little recap of conventions coming up
next week. I think that'd be a good
I've seen a few UK creators talking about doing overseas ones. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm in Dublin in a few weeks.
Drinking that dry.
Do the Brits abroad?
God. Got me football top to wear. Millwall abroad.
Oh dear. There's a reason we're not liked. In the rest of the world.
That's just me.
That's true. No, we're only joking. We love Tony and you know it. But we hope you enjoyed this show. So if you've got any like events or anything you want mentioned, then email awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing future guests. We've got a nice lot of guests coming out over the next couple of months. There's not going to be a Three Amigos for
that's a shame, isn't it, but
when it comes along people enjoy it more, you see.
Yeah
You know,
we can always do a Three Amigos if someone can't make the show, so
exactly, we've always got that in the pocket because we can just talk nonsense for England, can't we but yeah, so follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. We'll be announcing the guests, etc. If you do Facebook, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Like we said before, join the group Awesome Comics Talk if you do Facebook, because there's a fantastic community of people on there that are all about reading comics and making comics, and like genuinely it's indie comics as well. I know there is, sometimes we have a bit of Marvel and DC talk, but you all know that this is an indie comic show, and that community is an indie comics community, so definitely go check it out. Plus there's some amazing artwork that gets posted on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
As you'll see with Dan's art swap that he's going to start.
Yes what's this,
should be interesting.
Yes, so and thank you for listening to us, whether it is on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. thank you for all the new listeners, by the way. If you've just started tuning in to us, thank you very much for the uptake in new listeners. Hope you're enjoying the show and the guests. Lots more interesting stuff to come. Whether you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. You know, it gets the word out and people will discover books and creators and all kinds. You never know what's going to happen on this show. And if if you heard us on another network, I know Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, Spotify. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Ping Pong.
I mean, I don't.
Easy to say. I don't know how to manage that.
No, Ping Pong.
Ping Pong. It's quite easy to say. It's not easy to.
You've had three glasses of wine in the last half hour.
Just,
I will say that.
Look, just because you've had two bottles of Lembrini.
Listen, Carver. What's wrong with you?
What I love about this is there's a slight sort of slowdown on his connection. If you notice this, Dan. When he says things, it just goes.
It's not doing the connection. Carver. Right.
Oh dear, we're only joking. Anyway, so check us wherever you check us out. Thank you very much. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony.
NerionAnything.blogspot.com. There's quite a few gone up because I've been on holiday. Or SOSEZOHYZ on Twitter.
Nice. Dan.
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. I got another shout out, which I forgot, which is awesome. Shout out to Aaron Rackley because he helped me sort out the Vanguard site this week.
Oh, nice one. Oh, good lad.
Nice.
He knows his apples, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does indeed.
And his raspberries. As for me, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter @JesterDiablo. And stay tuned for more news on my upcoming comic soon.
Yes.
So, yes, you know, what's that?
I don't want to rush into it. So
Any day now.
No, I won't say that. But like a true believer, I did have a few people come up and ask about Indigo Park. but I'm not rushing into just launching it, you know. I mean, the guys have seen pages that I've been working on.
You need to do Indigo Park on Indiegogo, and the whole world will turn itself inside out.
Oh, you just want to see the world burn, don't you?
Yeah. See, launch it when it's ready, because you can only do it once.
We don't have to rush. We don't do it for money. We do it when we like it.
Yeah. That's and there'll probably be an episode about how I've mentally fallen apart during the whole process. But so look forward to that.
I feel like that's the entirety of the podcast. Great then, as me and Tony work on you.
Yeah. I like to think this show is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest meets Animal House.
Meets Shit Piss Fuck 2.
Why have you got to mention your favourite film every week?
Favourite sequel, best sequel ever made.
See you next week.
See you next week, guys.
Later, bye.
Oh no! Before we say goodbye. I'm going to make you say it. Have a brilliant week, everyone. And as always, what do they do, Tony?
They fucking awesome.
Bye.
Bye.